Hello everyone and welcome to Eat Life News, a show dedicated to bringing you all the latest headlines, scoops and narratives going on in the crazy world of Ethereum. I'm your host Dennis Omer, we're joined by my co-host DeFi Dude and Liz from Brighton. It's been such an incredibly packed week. There were so many stories and events and just so much going on in the world of Ethereum, in the world of crypto in general. And, you know, we almost had difficulty trying to decide what to leave out. And we had to leave out some important news. But in any case, there is some interesting tweet that I wanted to highlight. And this comes from Jack Dorsey, who's obviously the founder of Twitter. He's also the founder of Square, and they're involved with crypto. But he's known for being a bit of a Bitcoin maximalist. So his tweet was that Square is, and I quote, creating a new business focused on building an open developer platform with the sole goal of making it easy to create non-custodial, permissionless, and decentralized financial services. Our primary focus is Bitcoin. So, I mean, where do I even begin there? If the goal and the sole goal is making it easy to create non-custodial, permissionless, and decentralized financial services, there is already such a thing. There is already a permissionless, non-custodial, decentralized financial service platform, and it's called Ethereum, and there's already a DeFi space on it with literally thousands of dApps and applications and lending and borrowing and leverage and all sorts of things and insurance that's already going on. So it's as if Jack Dorsey's head is buried completely in the sand, and it's really frustrating to see him because he does have such a wide, let's say, megaphone. He has so many followers, and his messages mean something, yet here he is being a Bitcoin maxi and completely ignoring the existence of Ethereum, which has been successful in what he's trying to build and has been doing this for the last, well, DeFi for the last 3-4 years, and Ethereum has been going for the last 6 years. I don't know. Did you see this comment? How do you feel? Am I the only one frustrated at seeing Jack like act like this?
Yeah, I saw it. To say, you know, I guess I'm not surprised that that's something Jack would say, but it does seem just a little, maybe stupid's the wrong word, but like, come on. I mean, it's there on Ethereum. It exists. You don't need to, you know, try and bring that back to Bitcoin, you know, something that's really never been done. I mean, it's already happening on Ethereum, like you said. So I think Jack needs to get his priorities in check, maybe.
I mean, there have been other Bitcoin maximums, but over time, like, I think, like, the smart ones at least have recognized that there is a lot of value to Ethereum, and Ethereum is not a competitor to Bitcoin. It's always like the shark and the lion analogy. They both do separate things and they do them really well. So trying to recreate DeFi on Bitcoin, how do you even do that? It's not Turing complete. It just doesn't happen, which is why over the last 10 years, the best thing that they have been able to come up with is Lightning Network, and that is barely functioning, right? So anyway, let's move on to DeFi stuff because, okay, DeFi, yeah, we do gush about it, but okay, we always have a lot of controversies as well, right? And I think this week, a controversy we saw came from Sushi. So what's happening there?
Yep, we did see some Sushi controversy. Mostly kind of blew up on Twitter. And basically, it kind of all started. There was a governance proposal or a forum proposal for the governance that was from VCs, or maybe not from VCs, but basically the proposal was to do a strategic raise for, you know, these VCs and from these VCs. The rationale for that proposal is, and I quote, as part of the broader treasury diversification plan, we propose that a portion of the 51 million Sushi that is currently being held by the SushiSwap treasury be used to onboard institutional investors. SushiSwap has been a DeFi community darling since inception, and at this juncture, we feel that it's ready to welcome established crypto funds and cement SushiSwap as a household DeFi blue chip. Coming off the back of Sushi's greatest month to date, insane volume across ETH and Polygon, SushiSwap boasts extremely resilient fundamentals with an attractive pipeline of upcoming releases, end quote. So, I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but yeah, like I said, it did come with controversy, a lot of pushback. They're looking to raise $60 million by selling, I think, 25% of the developer treasury with a 6-month cliff and 18-month linear vesting. And as far as like the controversy itself, like, you know, a lot of people were just going kind of, a lot of shit posting, as you would say, on Twitter. But then you also did have some, you know, reputable pushbacks and stuff like, there was a pushback by Arco, one of the largest ex-Sushi holders with 7.5% of the circulating supply. And they came out and they basically said like, no, we're completely against, you know, this value destroying proposal. They will backstop a new proposal, and they will, you know, bid it up to 31% above the current time-weighted average price. So, interesting to see that they were all calling like, yeah, we're tempted to sell it at below price. Well, then you have people coming out saying, no, we're going to buy it at or above current market price. So they say SushiSwap doesn't need the money. There is no justification for the size of that $60 million raise. They say Sushi is currently undervalued as well, so there's no merit in even selling it at lower prices or a discounted price. And they're also claiming that VCs are trying to push through this deal and are doing it for arbitrage, not for long-term investing, since they'll be buying at discount while they sell their current holdings. And they've highlighted some proof of these actions from VCs like Defiance.
Interesting. I wonder how that's going to play out because, I mean, yes, do they need $60 million to, what would they even do with all that money? That's such a huge amount of money. And there's always been this talk of Sushi's price, and people are saying, looking at different, let's say, fundamental metrics, let's say volume per whatever share, or it seems to be undervalued for whatever reason compared to its competitors. So it's kind of selling 25% of the developer treasury. I can understand why it is kind of controversial when the money is not needed. At least 60 million is not needed. And I think there were some counter proposals to actually lower that amount as well and make it more reasonable. Now, moving on to another kind of AMM giant, we all know that Uniswap had introduced V3, and with V3, they had introduced concentrated liquidity. And this basically gave LPs more granular control over price ranges. So you have this notion of concentrated liquidity. You can basically supply your capital to a narrow band. But over time, LPs have complained that this setup is pretty intensive work and that there are certain drawbacks, and it's not as easy to use as V2. Now, the good thing is that the Uniswap team just published a blog post, and they're saying that they've spoken to all these LPs, and they've spoken to developers, they've spoken to community members, just to learn more about their experience with this V3, and you know what has just to gain feedback basically. And they've said that they've gotten the feedback from the community, and through this blog post, they're announcing that they're releasing 6 new features and improvements. So, and just to run you very quickly through what these are and how it actually makes LPs' lives easier. First of all, they're including a simplified way to add liquidity. And that will also be accompanied by these visualization charts where LPs can actually see what kind of distribution their capital is going to provide. And they can even modify that range by sliding these minimum maximum boundaries on the graph. I saw like this GIF of it and it looked pretty simple to do. They're also lowering the unique governance quorum to make it easier for anyone, the community, to submit improvement proposals. They're also introducing Uniswap Help Center to kind of help, you know, just to act as a kind of central point for any kind of help you might want to receive. And lastly, they're also improving the documentation, and they're going to be creating a new landing page to go with it, and basically presenting a much better user experience for the LPs and for users in general.
Yeah, and we also have some other Uniswap news as well this week in regards to their Optimism release. So, they announced that they are ready to launch the alpha version of Uniswap V3 on Optimism. And as you might know, hopefully by watching previous recordings of our podcast, Optimism is a layer 2 scaling solution. It uses optimistic rollups. And so during this alpha period, basically Optimism Ethereum, it's going to support a smaller amount of transactions per second, kind of in line with layer 1 and what we see. So you're not going to be seeing 10,000 transactions per second. But unlike layer 1, the transactions will confirm instantly. So that's really cool. They're estimating that transactions cost is going to be around 10x for savings. So 10 times less than probably what you would spend on Ethereum mainnet. As far as gas costs, and that transaction speeds are going to be ramped up over the coming weeks and months. So those good metrics to look forward to. They've also deployed an Optimism gateway, so users can easily migrate their assets over to the layer 2. I'm assuming this is similar to like a bridge as we've seen with other side chains and stuff like that. And note that during these early days, there's probably gonna be some downtime, both planned and unplanned. and withdrawals from Optimism to Ethereum, that's also going to take 7 days. So that's also something you want to keep in mind if you're planning on using Optimism as well. And for now, there's going to be a limited number of assets that are supported, including ETH, USDT, Wrapped Bitcoin, DAI, and SNX.
Wow. Yeah, that's really cool to see, because Uniswap is there. Like, pretty much every major DeFi application is basically on some kind of scaling solution, right? Even like looking at what was announced just this past week, there's just so much going on. And if you think back, even like in the first quarter, none of this was happening at this rate, right? I mean, look at our other news articles. We had Coinbase Wallet announced that they'll be supporting Polygon as well as Optimism. I mean, on a side note, they're also releasing a Chrome browser. But you'll just easily be able to switch between Ethereum mainnet and Polygon from there. In parallel, OKX have announced that users can withdraw their deposits from that centralized exchange to Polygon directly. We had Set Protocol announced that token sets have launched on Polygon. So, you know, now you can have your favorite sets on Polygon. We had Synthetix announce that they'll be launching Optimism on end of this month, I think 26th of July. We even had something from Hop Protocol as well, right? Which we've covered before.
Yep. So back in May, we actually covered the announcement of Hop Protocol. And basically, they kind of reduced the wait time of transfer tokens, you know, if you're transferring from Polygon to Ethereum. And it takes it down from like a 3-hour wait or multi-hour wait, basically down to 1 minute and 30 seconds. So that's obviously super cool and useful. But a few days ago, they actually announced that they're officially launching this bridge, and you can make almost instant transfers for USDC between Ethereum, Polygon, and XDAI. So all three of them, which that's great. And over the next couple of weeks, they're also going to be introducing more tokens. So it's not just going to be only USDC, but they also plan for ETH, DAI, USDT, Wrapped Bitcoin, and Matic as well. And also bringing support for Optimism and Arbitrum as well. So that's, you know, that's going to be so useful, super useful.
Yeah. And just to come back full circle, we also have Dharma Protocol, who teased that they will be introducing direct fiat on-ramping straight to Optimism, straight to Arbitrum, straight to Polygon. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like all the different infrastructure pieces are almost in place to have a fully fledged, functioning, healthy, scaling layer on top of Ethereum. I mean, we have Optimism, Arbitrum, Polygon. We have a few different ones. And as mentioned, like between Q1 and what we're seeing now, it's a day and night difference. We do have traction. We do have usage. And we're already starting to see gas savings. We're starting to see, you know, volumes and TVL really increase. And lastly, maybe we can even mention Illuvium, who have their own kind of NFT gaming focused scaling solution. And they recently published one of those ecosystem maps, which, you know, we'd love to see those ecosystem maps, right? It's basically, you can think of it like an image which has like the logos of all the different projects that are part of that ecosystem. So
yeah, unless Ethereum, it's Cardano's, of course.
Yeah, unless it's Cardano's, yeah. So for example, for Ethereum, you would have a box full of DEXs, like another box for NFTs, another box for infrastructure services. So what does Immutable X's kind of ecosystem map look like? Well, you have gaming, you have collectibles, you have DeFi, you have marketplaces, and you've already got a ton of projects on there. You have Illuvium itself, you have OpenSea, Token Trove, My Crypto Heroes, Gods Unchained, like many of these big names you could have heard of. And yeah, and it's great to see that it's not just the big ones like Optimism, Arbitrum, and Polygon that are coming out and will gain traction, but also these NFT ones are growing up as well and gaining traction. And speaking of NFTs, as our resident NFT guru, what do you have for us this week?
Yeah, as always, got a lot of stuff to cover, but on topic somewhat of, you know, gaming and NFTs kind of clashing, we do have another thing from Atari. So they're kind of coming back from the dead for another NFT collaboration. I think Atari, their first collaboration or their very first NFT, it was a digital wearable inside of Decentraland. I believe it was actually shoes that you got. And so now then you could wear, you know, official Atari branded stuff inside the world of Decentraland. But we did see them come back this week, and they actually teamed up with the, you know, popular horse racing dApp on Polygon that we've covered before, Zedrun. And so they're releasing limited edition skins for your horses. So basically, you know, you can own a racehorse, but it's going to be a certain color, whatever color that is. However, with this Atari collab, similar to the Stella Artois collab we saw a couple weeks ago, you can actually get, you know, your horse to look like an Atari branded horse, I guess. So that's cool. Otherwise, outside of just the gaming, we do have something from nifties.com that came out. They actually somewhat recently launched. I know they announced a raise, I think, a while back with people like Mark Cuban and Consensus and a lot of these big names. But they actually just launched their website and service or whatever, their project, just a couple days ago. And on the same day of launch, they actually featured a Warner Brothers partnership and Space Jam NFT. So if you know the, you know, famous 90s movie Space Jam, they came out this time with a limited edition Space Jam 2 NFT set with, you know, LeBron James and then some of the old favorite characters. You have them in both 2D and 3D, different rarities and stuff, and it's all sold out now, but you know, anyone that signed up got a free one. So that was kind of cool to have like official Warner Brothers Space Jam NFT, even though the second movie is probably going to be a letdown.
Is it? Oh, I haven't heard. Like, I know it's coming out, and I was hoping it would be great. Like, the first one is legendary.
Yeah, I've heard some stuff, but well, I'll have to see. I haven't seen it myself. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'll check that out. But yeah, and I guess like Warner Brothers is pretty big, right? So I guess that, like, last week we were saying every week there is some kind of huge either celebrity or cultural icon or something big from the conventional world that interacts with crypto. And here we go. We have Warner Brothers. We have Space Jam. We have, like, this is people where everyone, millions of people around the world in America get to hear about. But this time it's doing something NFT related, which is cool.
Yeah. And to add on to that, not only just Warner Bros., but just recently, I think like just a day or two ago, they did announce further partnership with like Sony, Broadway, and like a couple other like really, you know, big things. It was just cool to see. Yeah. As you said, seeing these famous people and all that. Next up on the list, we also have the Damien Hirst drop. He, you know, British artist Damien Hirst, he recently launched his 10,000 NFT project he calls The Currency. You know, it's basically, it's a 10,000 NFT drop that, you know, you might have heard about where there's a limit, except I don't think it's generative as far as I know, but basically the art itself is just a bunch of different dots, I guess, and users get to choose if they want their artwork minted in the form of a digital collectible or NFT or the physical paper edition. So I know I'd opt for the NFT, but at least he, you know, leaves it in the hands of the collector.
So what do you mean by dots?
Just like colorful dots on a piece of paper.
Is that literally what it says? Just dots on a...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The drop did come with controversy, though, for a couple of reasons. I think two of the biggest reasons were, one is that Damien is going to own 10% of the supply, I guess. And so some people thought that him owning 1,000 of the 10,000 was just way too much. I'm not sure if he obviously has a reason for that. I can't imagine, you know, his plan is to own 10% and then just sell them all, or, you know, so I'd assume there's something, there's a reason why he's keeping 10%, but we'll see. But another big reason why they caught some controversy, at least on Twitter, was that they are using a new NFT-focused sidechain called Palm NFT, which has just recently launched as well, instead of mainnet Ethereum, like many were probably hoping for. And Palm is just, you know, an NFT-focused sidechain, as far as I'm aware.
So. I think we actually covered Palm. Yeah, now that I look at it at our notes, like April 3rd, we mentioned that Palm is a joint venture with Consensus and Heyday Films, and they were kind of going to do this NFT-focused blockchain.
Now they're ready to go, I guess, just launch in the past few days. I think it's kind of like them and Nifties, or like Nifties might be a sister company to Palm or one of the other, something of the sort, but they're very close-knitted. But yeah, cool to see that they're launching, even though it is a sidechain, but I'm assuming there will be some kind of bridge or some way you can bring it to mainnet, but I guess time will tell with that.
And speaking of art and kind of media in general, there are a number of books on Ethereum published out there. And I personally love to read it because, I know so many of the people in it. And we're talking about Ethereum. It's always good to know its history and how it came out and who were the characters in the early days and how it's progressed. And maybe we can give a shout out to Camilo Russo's The Infinite Machine, which for me is like one of the best Ethereum books written out there. But now we're also getting a feature documentary film. And the cool thing is that this film is actually being crowdfunded through donations from the Ethereum community itself. and the crowdfunding has already taken place. They've collected almost $2 million worth of ETH at today's prices. And the cool thing is this also has an NFT component to it as well, right? Maybe you can tell us like how they're using NFTs in all of this.
Yeah. So the NFT, I think, just plays a smaller part in, you know, the bigger picture. But they did collaborate with a popular NFT artist, People Pleaser. She has released, I believe, like the main Uniswap NFT for their V3 launch and some of the really cool ones as well. And yeah, so she made these three limited edition NFTs. It's like, you know, of the poster itself, or like the, yeah, I guess the cover of the movie, you might call it, something like that. Just a movie poster, I guess. And it's as an NFT, and basically the top three people who contributed get this NFT. So only three, you know, you can have 100 contributors, but whoever contributed the most out of those few hundred people would get that NFT.
Oh, and spoiler alert, one of those contributors is Mariano Conti, who was the third highest contributor. So he gets to have his name kind of included in the credits as contributing producer. And I think the top contributor would receive executive, and the second highest would be co-executive, like that. And there was basically all sorts of perks, you know, as you mentioned. There's the poster, there's the access to the special Discord, and having your name on the credits list, and this whole bunch of NFTs. For me, like, I really love this idea of this documentary, and especially some of the ideas around the creators. And there was this really nice quote that they say: in this film, we approach Ethereum as an infinite garden. Instead of thinking of Ethereum as a machine controlled by a central brain, we see it as a decentralized ecosystem with soil, plants, and insects that need to be cared for in order to grow. And I think that's a beautiful metaphor for this place, this ecosystem that we called Ethereum. And this movie will be directed by Zach Ingrassi, who's pretty popular. His films have been featured and released on Netflix and National Geographic and Amazon Prime, so he's pretty popular. But okay, I saw the timeline for this, and the movie is going to be released in the winter of 2023. Like, I guess for movie making, that might be normal, but by crypto standards, geez, that's like a lifetime away. Like, how are we going to wait 2 more years to watch this documentary? But anyway, that's when it's coming out.
We'll be on Ethereum 5.0 by then.
Yeah, yeah. And lastly, we'll wrap up with a very quick technical piece, and that's Trent Van Epp's new graphic that he's published that shows Ethereum's upgrade path. It's basically a very nice and simple way to understand what are the next steps in Ethereum's future. Now, it shows in parallel that first we have upgrades to the proof-of-work chain, like the London hard fork, EIP-1559, that's coming with it. But in parallel, we also do have upgrades to the proof-of-stake chain, to the Beacon chain, called the Altair upgrade. Once those upgrades happen in late 2021, in late next year for sure, we will have the merge where the proof-of-work chain is integrated into the proof-of-stake chain, so there's no longer any proof-of-work being done. And then in future years, in 2022, we'll get data sharding and all the other ETH2 phases. Now, just to come back to that Altair upgrade in the Beacon chain, so Proto Lambda tweeted this week that the Altair devnet has already forked from phase 0 to Altair successfully, and the cool thing is that this kind of upgrade already has on it Prism, Lighthouse, Nimbus, Teku, and Lodestar. And, you know, there was a few small hiccups, it always does, but the chain is finalizing, and this bodes very well for us to get that important ETH 2.0 upgrade that I think is going to happen pretty much later this year. And with that, we leave behind another packed week for Ethereum. Thank you again for joining us, and until we see you in another busy week next time, thank you very much and see you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
This podcast is supported by the awesome team at Kyber Network. For more information and to find out how Kyber Network provides liquidity to over 100 different dApps, wallets, and exchanges, check out kyber.network.